Betches Media presents...
Chrissy Teigen referred to Donald Trump as a pussy-ass bitch.
Look, he's a sick puppy. He shouldn't be there.
Well, I lost half a day of skiing.
I'm going to punch him out and I'm going to go to jail. I'm going to be happy.
The Betches Up Podcast.
A speaker has not been elected.
Hello, this is the Betches Up Podcast, where C-SPAN meets the group chat to help you process and laugh at the biggest topics in U.S. news and politics. I'm Amanda Duberman, the news director at Betches.
I'm Elise Morales, comedian and writer of the Betches Sub newsletter.
And I'm Sammy Sage, host of the Morning Announcements podcast and chief creative officer at Betches.
Hello, Sammy. Hello, everybody. I feel like we've been spiritually communicating via each other's podcast recently. Yes. So it's nice to all be in the same place.
Thank you. Thank you so much for stepping in for me in my time of need. You know, I really, really appreciate it. And I know the listeners do too, because... You know, it's a job.
It is.
I don't know how you do that every day. Well, it's kind of like Elise doing the newsletter for
right
every day. It's like it kind of just becomes part of your existence.
Your morning.
Yeah.
Your morning announcements.
Yeah, exactly. It's actually like the one part of my life besides maybe like brushing my teeth. That's like it's the only thing that's equally as consistent as that.
We appreciate your service, and you're like nominated for a People's Choice Podcast Award, and we'll be sharing more information about that to make sure we clinch that for sure.
Oh yeah. So I don't know if like the audience is allowed to vote, but it might. Oh. I'll let you know. I think it was the audience votes to put you like on as a finalist.
Now we go to a jury.
I think. Wow. We'll confirm.
Yes, but, of course.
I'm sure everyone's going to be
sneak peek.
Yeah, early sneak peek. But either way, we got to finalist. And if that was the only thing that people's democratic voting power was able to achieve, then that's wonderful. We can't force Congress, aka the podcast People's Choice Board, to, you know, make the right decisions. It's just not up to us. But it's a representative podcast award democracy, clearly, we have going here.
Clearly. Elise, how are you? How was your weekend?
Weekend was good. Surprisingly, like, busy and full of things. I did a little improv this weekend, which I felt like I was like dusting off like my old, not even hobby, like my old like life's mission. So
casual.
Yeah. So honestly, really, really fun. Great weekend. Not much That's to great. Report other than that.
And now we find ourselves on another weekday in the summer of 2023 on Indictment Watch. We will get right into it. Today's number is 4, because that is the number of indictments Donald Trump will have under his belt by the end of this week. Like, for sure, it's coming this week. Probably today or tomorrow, me and Sammy have been like trying to read between the lines of things that have come out. I thought it was going to be today simply because we do know when I try to take leisure time or enjoy myself, Trump is indicted. And today is my birthday. So I think it's definitely going to be today.
Birthday, Amanda.
I think it's likely coming today.
Oh, Amanda, that bodes.
It bodes terribly. The range of expressions on Sammy's face, the delight at realizing it was my birthday, followed by the realization that maybe that will be paired.
Yeah, but also it's kind of a birthday present.
Yes. But oh yeah, that will always not, be the that would know? Always be the date that Donald Trump was indicted. Me and Halle Berry's birthday.
Oh, I mean, you'll it never
would
forget
be on
it.
Brand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it would. Right, it's always on brand. Amanda's like a news witch, so it's like something about your energy. It's part of like the cosmos at this point.
If I dare to walk away and like sign off early today and take a walk, it will happen. So look alive, Sammy.
Oh, I'm here. But here's the thing. Indictment Watch is getting a little bit.
Yeah.
It's losing its luster a little bit, but I'd rather be on Indictment Watch than not on Indictment Watch. So
absolutely.
I'd rather not be in an indictment drought. I would rather be swimming in indictments for sure.
It's something you want to have too much of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And this is, I feel like, a really good one, because this is the state level one where, like, if he were to become president again, which we all hope is not the case, but if he were to somehow do that again, this is the one that he, like, can't pardon himself out of.
So. Yeah, and I also think that Bonnie Willis is the least likely to play ball with you know, kind of going easy just because people are like, please go easy.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, so that's why she's my favorite indictment. Also my mother's favorite indictment.
This is my favorite storyline.
She talks about her.
Your mom has been fixated on this particular indictment.
Yeah. Her estranged husband passed away, but she's very, very focused on the indictment.
Listen, whatever helps, whatever,
you know, dictator.
Takes her mind off
exactly. So, yeah. We're very excited about this one. It's kind of like the finale, you know, it's the fireworks show of the criminal.
It really is. It really is. And it is great that it's so Fani Willis is super interesting. She's the Democratic district attorney and the first Black woman to serve in that role in Fulton County. Her dad was also a lawyer who's a defense attorney. Specifically, he was also a Black Panther. So it just sort of like adds to the satisfaction and makes this indictment definitely a contender for top indictment, because she'll be charging a former president who employed white supremacy to animate his base to aid his attempt to overturn the election result. So he has obviously been attacking her. It is so crazy how openly he is attacking everybody. Like this morning, he's saying one of these witnesses really shouldn't go. I don't know him. He said to this woman, I don't know why this is like, he's just referred to her as a young woman, a young racist in Atlanta.
A young racist in Atlanta is very funny.
I don't know why. It's just so specific. And it's just like it's just a DA.
Well, it's very interesting also that he's going so hard on attacking her by name, attacking witnesses by name, when in his penultimate indictment, I guess, the judge has been a big issue in that case is like making sure that he doesn't post about people and doesn't attack them by name. And that's kind of like one of the things that he and his team are going back and forth about in the Washington, D.C. election fraud case. Mm-hmm. So it's like, it is incredible his inability to like learn anything. Like literally he's having meetings.
Shut the fuck up. Yeah.
He's having meetings right now in his other case about how the DOJ like tried to get this protective order and how he's not supposed to post about stuff while posting about the new case.
Well, I think that like it's sort of like if he were to respond the normal way, like the way a person would when they're under some sort of order from a judge, that would almost like undermine the whole thing. Like he can't stop. There's no option for him other than to do this. I think the bigger question is what comes out of it and what do we cover of it? Because I feel like I've been reading his little messages and they're very, I will say they have been pretty funny, but I don't want like anyone else to read them. Like and I only want to hear about them as far as they are relevant to his to the cases that he will be held accountable for those statements, because his whole thing, like I'm actually watching them like come up on my TV. Like he's there. He did a whole speech outside a helicopter as usual. Like he, you know, he's at least you said the other day when I sent you his little Mike Pence tweet.
Yes.
In a return to form.
Yes.
Little with the apostrophe in the wrong place here. I'm doing it again. I'm talking about it, but he knows what he's doing. He can't stop doing this. It doesn't matter, because think about like he did this insurrection and he's still just getting charged. Mm-hmm. So he knows that they can't keep up with his malfeasance, no matter how hard they try.
I had to look at his Truth Social page today because I was including a quote. I was including a like quote tweet of him in the newsletter, and I've been tricked before by fake Donald Trump Truth Social posts. So I had to like go to his page to make sure that this was a real like actual thing that he posted. And it is wild. He is posting constantly on there, all caps, long paragraphs, crazy stuff. And I was like, again, return to form. I was like, God damn, I don't think there's ever been a more online politician. It's just like, because it's on this, it's weirdly siloed onto his own personal blog, basically. Because his Truth Social page has to be the only Truth Social that gets any traffic of any kind. I don't even know how many users it has, but it was absolutely bizarre to look at it. And I was like, this is a cursed page.
But it's nice that you didn't know until you looked.
No. It's like a live journal, kind of, but really live. You know, he's like vlogging his...
Yes.
He's an old school blogger at this point.
You know? It's in his head, and then it's the truth.
It's also must be so fascinating to be inside the DOJ, mm-hmm. and you're watching him create pages of evidence mm-hmm. as you're doing this. He's... Yeah, I mean, he's just going to keep... This is part of the strategy. He's going to do this until the election or whatever. Yeah. And it's just... This is how he is. There's no tomorrow. As you say, there's just pushing. There's just pushing. I do have to say that, like, for a 78-year-old, right? 79, maybe. He's not... He is fairly savvy with the internet. He's definitely our... he's our octogenarian class's most savvy internet user mm-hmm. by a lot.
He's definitely got message discipline. He just only calls Jack Smith deranged.
deranged is so funny.
Especially because you look at Jack Smith and nobody could not be
farther from deranged.
Is just so... He could
mentally ill and deranged.
Yeah. Like, you've never seen someone so just...
Right.
Standing there, like, saying barely anything. And his voice is not even, like, make fun ofable. It's mm-mm. sort of non-threatening, I would say.
It's also very funny that he's deranged in his posting about deranged Jackson. Like, again, his page reads like someone where, like, you call your mom and you're like, have you seen Uncle Tommy's page? Like, I think someone needs to call him and see. He's posting a lot. Like,
yep.
Like, no, absolutely. If this was a private citizen, if this was anybody else, truly their family would be rallying around them and trying to come up with a solution. I mean, we're going to come back to kind of like the impact of all of these indictments on 2024 in the main news segment. One thing that is another thing about him, like, continuing to tweet is that I believe Judge Chutkan was telling his lawyers at the hearing last week, like, we have to make this quick and speedy because the longer we wait to have this trial, the more time there is for your client to say shit that he should not. So, like, if you want to make this, like, prolong this, then have him shut the fuck up because he's already trying to intimidate witnesses. He's already trying to influence whatever juries they're going to be. We have to make this fast simply to, like, get ahead of his deranged truth. So it's, like, kind of satisfying that that might come back to sort of bite him. But I'm sure he doesn't listen to anything his lawyers say.
Absolutely not.
Yeah, they literally would have to put a muzzle on him.
Yeah.
And on his hands as well. Mm-hmm. You would have to put him in a padded room if they want him to stop talking.
Sam, you know how you say there's probably like three Taylor Swifts doing that show. They need to just clone him three and just like keep his out of pocket ones in the back and pull out his like more subdued clone for shit like this.
Any of the clones are going to be on the right side of legality, to be honest.
There's a fundamental glitch.
Yeah.
I feel like, I can't remember what show it was, but there was a show where, like, it was a cartoon and, like, every clone got slightly more fucked up than the last clone. And I feel like that's what we're dealing with the Donald Trump clone is, like, they're weirder and crazier.
Yeah. So this is probably, like, the 16th version.
I mean, the smaller you make the gene pool, the issues, more issues. So, yeah, no, this is... It's frightening, but the part that I find even more frightening on some level is that my own reaction to it, it's like I built a tolerance. Like, you know, there's nothing that he could do at this point that I'm like going to react strongly to. And my worry is that the rest of the American public feels even more disengaged because I can at least look at it and be like, okay, this is so fucked up and like, maybe my emotions aren't as high as they were back in the day, but because you need to protect yourself, you can't be running at that. Also, he's not president.
Right. But that hypervigilance isn't there because like he is not currently president.
Right. He's somewhat neutralized a little, but
for now.
Yeah. But so I'm just worried that like everyone else is just going to be like, yeah, whatever. And they're not going to like see that this is the insurrection continued.
Right. I mean, that is like his, like, I don't want to say the genius thing he does. It's just like, because it's constantly pouring
It's an exploitation of human nature more than it's genius. It's just
you can't pinpoint anything to get particularly enraged about or to draw attention to when he's constantly doing it, which adds to his narrative that he's being piled on because he's doing shit constantly. It's like, yeah, he's like, oh, isn't it crazy? I have 4 indictments. Yeah, bitch, because you did a bunch of crimes.
You lived a life of crime and you've managed to evade it till now. So actually consider yourself a success at this point. Because he's not even going to go to jail, probably. Like, probably. Even if he's convicted, quote unquote, or there's some sort of deal worked out where he can't be president. The man will at worst be living at Mar-a-Lago and between Bedminster and Mar-a-Lago with whatever frequency he wants while like being watched by the Secret Service. Okay, so he's, you know, that's the worst he'll experience.
Yeah.
I bet you they'll still let him truth from now, from time to time.
Yeah, and like, he'll probably, if he wants to get his like rally fix, he'll like have people, he'll like stand on his own fucking lawn and have people come out there.
He'll have secret sessions inside Mar-a-Lago.
Yeah.
It's a public club. Like, they're not going to be like, you can't go to your house. That's the public club. He'll still do stuff.
I want him to go to prison mainly because I do want to see what the man looks like when he doesn't have access to like his hair dye, his self tanner, whatever, just whatever elaborate thing he does to. I mean, he does look insane, but I bet he probably looks 100 years old.
There's no circumstance that he would go to jail, like actual prison. But yeah, so he'll always have those things. Maybe they wouldn't let him like be visible because you can't, I don't know, who knows what limitations they would maybe put on it. But
yeah,
it's, I don't know. I think next year is maybe going to kick us back into feeling things again. We'll see.
I think so too. The specter of him potentially becoming president. We'll come back to him and his campaigning. But first for main news, the first part of main news today, we're going to set the scene for this weekend's Republican Coachella, aka the Iowa State Fair. So the Republican primaries horrifyingly are beginning in 5 months.
Oh my God.
The Iowa caucus is on January 15th for Republicans. Democrats are starting somewhere else. Plus it's irrelevant. 5 months away. The GOP primary is next week, or the first debate, rather. GOP candidates flock to Iowa to grill pork chops with its governor and try unsuccessfully, for the most part, to convince voters and conservative tastemakers.
Tastemakers. It's rude that they put this debate before Labor Day. I'm just going to throw that out there, but
it really is. The vibes are so off for all of us to have to be super attentive to the news right now. It's nobody's in the mood for this.
September. Yeah,
I know. I'm going to be in Florida and I'm like, I'm going to have to sneak away because I'll be in mixed political company. And I'm like, I can't be dealing with this.
No. The most circulated moment from the weekend was probably Vivek Ramaswamy rapping Eminem's Lose Yourself, which was a moment. That was a choice that made me feel weird.
That was so L to the OG. Dude, be the OG. Yeah. But at the same time, I watched the video. It almost felt like it was off the cuff. Yeah, he just kind of started.
I guess Kim Reynolds, the Iowa governor, sits down with all of these people. I don't know like how she got this gig, because it makes like, and why like she gets to like make Iowa so influential because she does these little chats with them. But I guess she asked all of them. Yeah, I guess she asked all of them their like walk-off song, their like leaving hype song. And he said that. And so they started playing it as he left. And then he was like, oh, I'm just gonna take it away.
Right. It was, he's apparently doing really, quote unquote, well.
This was happening, right? As he's like, there was like two big polls that came out last week, and one of them had DeSantis in second and the other had him in second. And they're still pretty far from Trump. But what do you think? That's so interesting to me that this guy is sneaking up. Like, who do you think he's appealing to that he might be like, he seems to be like on his way to being anointed the, you know, Trump alternative. Why is that?
You know, I'll be honest, I kind of see it. I see that because he has an interesting story. And my guess is that to that type of person, he has a level of charisma and a history that appeals to them. Mm-hmm. I think they like that, even though he comes from like he's pretty self-made, that he is still a conservative. And just as you think like, oh, maybe he isn't a total psycho, you read that he thinks climate change is a hoax. Mm-hmm. And then you're like, well, he obviously hates gay people and abortion, you know. But then I'm like, what does this guy really think? What does he really know about governing? And what would he actually do once he got there? And he's a big wild card because he could maybe win because people don't know because he's never been in government before. So and there's this belief that like if you run a business, you could run the government. Fucking false. But I will just say that that is a belief that exists. So he sort of gives me like conservative Bloomberg vibes. So we'll see.
And I feel like he literally is just benefiting from the exact same narrative that Donald Trump benefited from. So it would make sense that if people want an alternative to Trump, namely because he's, you know, going to be indicted four times or whatever, because Republicans like it seems like especially the base, like any opposition to Trump is just like almost situational. They're like, oh, well, he's kind of like tainted annoying for all these other reasons and blah, blah, blah. So it's like Vivek Ramaswamy has all the Trump outsider credentials, all of, and like the stuff that Donald Trump benefited from in 2016, which is zero record of anything. So he can just kind of say whatever, make wild claims. He's not actually running against like having done anything. And funnily enough, as kind of was demonstrated by the Lose Yourself, he is a little swaggier than the other ones. Like I would say, like he has a little more charisma. Like what? Like Ron DeSantis is crashing and burning. His campaign is doing really quite badly compared to what the expectations were, and a lot of it is because he is completely swagless.
Absolutely.
And like probably could not rap Lose Yourself to any to any standard at all. Like, I mean, I think we're gonna get into it, but Trump basically trolled him for not being likable and not being cool at all during the actual thing. So I feel like Ramaswamy, at least, I mean, he seems cool in a way of like in a very Kendall Roy-esque way. Like, like the tech bro vibe. Like people who think Elon Musk is cool and funny will probably think Vivek Ramaswamy is cool, but like no one thinks that Ron DeSantis is cool in any level.
Ron DeSantis, I would say that the failure of his campaign is 100% due to the fact that he has not 1 ounce of charisma to the point that he comes off. He has no riz. He has Ted Cruz levels of off-puttingness, but like almost worse, I think.
It's cringier.
It's cringier in a way. And
because it's more unexpected.
It's also like there's more aggression in what he has done. So his like cruelty is also shining through really clear. So I think DeSantis he has a big personality problem, but agreed. Vivek Ramaswamy I haven't seen enough about him to like really get a full picture, but it's not, you know,
based on that charisma void.
Yes, exactly. And that's the best you can ask for sometimes.
The best you can ask here. So we'll come back to Trump briefly. He came and went to this thing pretty quickly, but he still drew the largest crowd. At one point, like Elise said, he and his campaign came to troll Ron DeSantis. His plane flew overhead while, I don't know if they timed this, but while Ron DeSantis was addressing the crowd. So then the crowd got distracted and began like cheering for the plane. They probably timed it. And then the Trump campaign paid for a banner that flew over the air and just said, "Be likable, Ron." I just wonder like who was brainstorming
so
the
fucking
copy?
Funny.
Like,
come on.
Were they
that
just
is
like,
hilarious.
What should we put on it? And do you think "Be likable, Ron" was the first idea?
No, I think "be likable." I think probably someone else came up with "be likable," and Trump thought that that was like very funny.
It is very funny.
It is.
It's actually the meanest dig that he could possibly.
Somebody like, crossed the picket line to write that.
Damn, I actually hate how good it was.
It cuts to the core of like Ron's issues. And I feel like Trump struggled to find a nickname for Ron DeSantis. Mm-hmm. is going to end soon. And I think it might be unlikable Ron. Or
that
something.
Blows. Damn, Elise. Yes. That really, he hasn't even done that, though.
He hasn't done it. But I think that he's putting Be Likeable Ron on a banner, I think unlikable Ron DeSantis is coming.
Steps away.
Is steps away. Because I feel like that is very direct and to the point. I mean, it's literally the equivalent of being like, nerd. Like,
but it's also like, okay, it's really on. It's true.
Right.
It's
like
true.
If Ron DeSantis and Donald Trump were both in seventh grade together, like this would be bullying. Somebody would be suspended. In this case, it's very funny because this man, like we said, has absolutely no riz whatsoever. And just like to see one of the most loathsome people on the planet like steal your thunder that way is crazy.
I actually believe that like in terms of intentions, like Ron DeSantis, I think, is actively crueler to more people on purpose than Donald Trump. I think for Donald Trump, everybody is just collateral in his own pursuit of self, of whatever it is. It's more about apathy and not giving a fuck about anyone else. Ron DeSantis, I think, actually wants to hurt people, like on purpose a lot. Mm-hmm. And that's why I find this to be, I can laugh at this. Mm-hmm. Not that I think Trump should be the candidate, God forbid, but Ron DeSantis. But I think both of them should scat.
Well, amid all of these indictments, I think there is some like there is some room to acknowledge that like it could be logistically not possible for this man to win the nomination. And maybe over time people will start to realize that. So who do we think will surface as the favorite? Do you think that this new poll showing Ron DeSantis falling behind is maybe more kind of coming to terms with the fact that I think Ron DeSantis was the anointed one? And like you said, now people see him open his mouth and that he's a weird dude. And like they like vibes. They like vibes and they don't like this guy's vibe.
He could not. No. Ron DeSantis is someone who he can't work. Unlikable.
Yeah.
Unlikable Ron DeSantis.
Ron DeSantis.
It's just not going to work. That's it.
It has the same cadence as Unsinkable Molly Brown. I think that's why I like it.
Yes. Yes. I was like, but that really flows.
Yeah.
We should make the title of the episode this.
Unsinkable Ron DeSantis. Yeah.
Well, I think that there's really no worse. I feel like Ron DeSantis is getting the Jeb Bush treatment. There is no worse narrative that you could have than that you are unlikable and that your personality sucks.
Right.
Like that. Is the worst as a politician narrative that he could have. So I actually really am starting to feel like if Trump is out for logistical reasons, it's not going to be Ron DeSantis. And I think we're going to have to see how these debates go to see who kind of emerges. Vivek Ramaswamy is doing better in the polls. I think, like we just said, he appeals to people who like the Trump outsideriness of it all. I know Tim Scott has a lot of like personal backing of like establishment people, but I don't know if that wins you a Republican primary. I just honestly think that they're going to pick Trump again come hell or high water.
I think it could end up being an absolute shit show because there could be something that they could pick him and then he could be unable to run. And then what is it?
Ooh,
his
baby.
VP?
Yeah.
Like what happens there? So
if you need a backup nominee, I don't know. We'll look into that though. That's fascinating.
I mean, I don't think the Constitution put that in there because usually you're not supposed to be running for president if you did a sedition, but okay, different, whatever. We'll talk about that another time. But I totally agree with you. An election is a popularity contest and Ron DeSantis is probably the least popular kid in this high school.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's getting worse by the day.
Yeah.
Today's episode of American Fever Dream is brought to you by Nuuly. Have you ever felt that fast fashion ick, but can't always afford the super high-end stuff? I have a solution for you. It's Nuuly. Nuuly has everything you need to bring your closet up to speed for the season without breaking the bank. Free your closet of impulse purchases and skip the buyer's remorse by renting instead. Newly is a subscription rental service, and for just $98 a month, you get your choice of any six styles. They also have inclusive sizing up to 5X, as well as petite and maternity. You get fast, free shipping and returns, and professional cleaning in Newly's state-of-the-art laundering facility. No laundry for you to worry about. This is the best. You just put it back in your box, send it out, and before you know it, you've got your next one. And you always have the option to buy what you love for sometimes up to 75% off. I bought the Rachel Antonoff pasta puffer from them. I was obsessed with it, like everybody who tries it is, and it was completely sold out everywhere else. So I felt like I really, really had an in there. So thank you, Newly. Newly is an amazing value at $98 a month for any six styles. And right now you can get $20 off your first month of Newly when you sign up with the code FEVERDREAM20. Just go to NUULY.com. That's Newly with two U's, and enter the code FEVERDREAM20 and sign up to get $20 off your first month. That's NUULY.com, Newly with two U's with code FEVERDREAM20. Newly subscription clothing rental, change your clothes.
All right, next up in May news, we'll discuss another story that is definitely going to influence the 2024 election. Attorney General Merrick Garland announced on Friday that he's appointing the U.S. Attorney for Delaware, David Weiss, as special counsel to lead the investigation into Hunter Biden. What's interesting about this, and I don't really know what to make of this, is like this guy asked specifically, he was like, can I be special counsel now? And then Merrick Garland was like, yeah, sure. He was already the one handling this investigation, so I guess the change means in Merrick Garland's announcement, he just said the appointment confirms my commitment to provide Mr. Weiss all of the resources he requests, and it reaffirms that Mr. Weiss has the authority he needs to conduct a thorough investigation, blah, blah, blah. Obviously, as
there's something they're not telling us about how this went down, and we'll find out one day. Hopefully soon. I don't really understand. It's all weird. Something's weird. There's
with
a missing
the special counsel appointment
a missing piece about the special counsel appointment.
Yeah, I have a lot of questions. As everybody knows, Hunter, even though we probably haven't talked about it on this podcast, but everybody knows, Hunter Biden had a plea deal with the government to plead guilty to tax evasion and a gun charge, a diversion agreement. But as long as he didn't have to serve prison time. And also, this is important, he was going to be immune from any additional charges in the future. And I think that included like obviously there's, you know, people are investigating him for things that do not exist, like using his connections to like enrich himself. But it seems like that might have been like part of the package. I guess neither side was willing to acknowledge that that wasn't the case, that he would be immune from something like that. So the deal came apart in a fairly dramatic fashion in July. The two sides did not seem aligned on that immunity part, and the judge was not happy with it either. So they were asked to resolve their differences, and they have not done that. So this could go to a trial. I would think that Republicans would be really happy that there's a special counsel, but like that might indicate that, you know, the administration is taking these, you know, charges very seriously, but they're super whiny about it. They don't like this prosecutor because he did already offer Hunter Biden that deal. So they're like, just fuck this guy. We can't trust him. House Republicans, but nobody else in America are this fixated on Hunter Biden. Nobody cares, but the 200 and whatever House Republicans.
Oh, the Republicans just need, it's kind of like you can't let the ball hit the floor. Like you got to keep the ball in the air. So they're just, they know that no one's reading that closely into this. And they're just like, we're mad. Hunter Biden, there's nothing beyond it. Like we are so at this point, the country is so polarized and getting things from such a divergent perspective that like, nothing is ever going beyond, oh, Hunter Biden, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And so they're just like mad. We're mad again. Like, it's not about anything. It's like, we have to keep the ball in the air. We have to keep this talking point going for another year. So we got to be mad. Yep, we can't be like, yeah, you guys took care of it. Thank you. Mm-hmm. So, you know.
It's just very, like, at first they were like, why isn't there a special counsel? Blah, blah, blah. And now they get one and they're like, well, we don't like that one. Mm-hmm. Even though he's like,
Trump appointed and has been investigating Hunter Biden since the Trump administration. Yes. But they're mad and they're saying this is just another way for the Biden run DOJ to protect this son. It's like, is he be protected in a trial?
Right.
Yeah. And they're mad because there were those two IRS whistleblowers who like last month they went and testified and they were like, you know, Hunter Biden's been being shielded. And one of the things that they said was like that David Weiss specifically tried to bring charges against him in California and Washington, but then prosecutors in those jurisdictions didn't want to play ball with him. So he was shielded. Now that David Weiss is the special counsel, he's able to bring charges in Washington and California if he wants. But now they're not mad about that anymore. Mm-hmm. It's the, like, their whole thing is to be constantly aggrieved. So you can't acknowledge any wins or that anything was done to your liking, because then you can't be aggrieved. And I also feel like they're trying to make this the, like, but what about her emails of 2024? Yeah. And I just don't think it has the juice, because people don't hate. The average people don't hate Hunter Biden or have feelings about Hunter Biden on the level that we learned they had about Hillary Clinton.
Right. He's also not the person.
Yeah.
He's not even the person.
He's not the guy.
No. It's not him. It's not about his own thing.
Right.
It's like, also, I think another piece of this is that people realize that Hunter Biden is someone who has an addiction. And I think that a lot of people have family members or circumstances where they're like, where they have a family member who's done something due to an addiction. Mm-hmm. And they're like, not going to, I don't think that like the majority of people are going to not vote for Biden because of his son's issues. I think that they see a father who loves their son, and that's like what the normal person sees, yeah. Not like the Fox News addled psycho.
Well, and then the House Republicans, they have to maintain this specter for which there's no evidence that like Hunter Biden was bringing his dad in on some of his business deals. So like, I guess like there's no evidence of any wrongdoing on the president's part at all. But House Republicans are like, absolutely, this is going to open an impeachment inquiry, which is, again, just to have something to talk about. There is nothing, absolutely nothing there. And they're going to be like, an inquiry just means that we're just going to look into things. But like, I feel like if they're going to open an inquiry, they're going to probably impeach him. And then it's like, are we looking at a fucking Biden impeachment over nothing next year? Or I do also think like,
yeah,
this is
and
not
all
a
that
politically
does is cheapen
popular,
impeachment.
Cheapen impeachment. I think voters are like, are kind of exhausted by that. They see right through it. I don't know. I like you guys were saying, I don't know if this is like a politically favorable thing for them to be constantly pursuing. Like when you, like the Republicans that are electing Republicans because they want Republicans to execute conservative policies, that's fixating on Hunter Biden. Isn't that like, I feel
think
like
it just,
could backfire.
Yeah.
I hope so.
I honestly think that it won't necessarily backfire. I just think it continues to degrade a situation. Yeah. It's like, imagine like the foundation of all of this just chip away. This just chips away at engagement, makes people more disillusioned. And ultimately it could matter, but only as like a pile on. But I think, but at the end of the day, we are seeing people come out in elections because they're like, okay, fuck that. What about my uterus? You know, and I think that,
absolutely.
Or like my kid or who's, you know, I think that that's what's really driving people out. And I think people are now just so jaded by the media and how these things are, how things are covered and what bullshit these politicians are engaged in, that they're just like, okay, well, at the end of the day, I know I need to come out and vote for my body, my reproductive rights and my children and climate. And that's what's ultimately going to get people to go out next year. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just, who are we going out for?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. There's clearly people that are motivated by electing candidates that are going to protect like their abortion rights. I think that is more motivating than like, oh, let me reelect these clowns that were trying to like get Hunter Biden in prison for the past like 3 years. Like you're right. He's like a former addict with young children. Like people are like more inclined to be like, yeah, just like leave him alone.
Yeah.
Yeah. Again, we like talked about this last week when we were talking about Ohio, but I just feel like the Republican Party is completely off base about what is motivating people to come to the polls. They were off base in the midterms when so many candidates went on it all in on like election denialism. And it turns out that's really, really unpopular. They are off base on abortion. They're off base on climate, which again is in the news because of everything that's going on in Maui and all of, like,
yeah,
it's just, they don't have an actual grip on what motivates people and fires them up. And like, I'm sure if we were to talk to like really hardcore Republicans, they care about the Hunter Biden thing and maybe like people who watch a lot of Fox News are vaguely interested in the Hunter Biden thing, but I don't even think it has the juice of other like scandals that motivated quote unquote scandals again, like of Hillary or people who were motivated by being angry about how the pandemic was handled. Like, I don't think that it, like people who have like Fauci conspiracy theories and stuff, like, I don't even think this has that juice behind it either.
I think that they confuse like ratings and enthusiasm on like the daily discourse with being and like being sort of representative of what will happen in an election. But their issue is that it's not like everyone in America has always been voting and you're just trying to like get a few middle people to switch sides. There's so many disengaged people who are now just starting to vote who are like, I'm just going to vote for the side that's going to save my rights or not.
Yeah.
You know, so I think that like, they're trying to just win over people who are already engaged. They're not thinking about like, how do I bring in a new person? And I don't think anyone's going to be brought in by like this abuse of the president's son who has an like a real common problem. Like, I don't think that that's going to be like, oh, let me see what these politicians have done for me lately. Mm-hmm. And I just don't think that that's going to get people to be engaged in democracy. So, yeah.
Yeah, I agree. It would be incredible to continue to watch conservative politicians' actions backfire on them. It's really a trend that I think should stick around for a while.
It does feel good. It does feel good.
All right. Finally today for our Men Okay, we have an update on the deranged billionaire cage fight. And the update is that like maybe this saga is over. I want to talk about this, but I also fucking hate this. But I still want to talk about it. According to Mark Zuckerberg, this is over. The Meta CEO said that despite agreeing to Musk's challenge for a cage fight, he has not heard anything from Musk about it. Zuckerberg posted on Threads that he like wanted to do it. He pursued the fight in earnest. He'd even coordinated with the UFC president to hold an event for charity, but that Elon won't confirm a date and that if Elon wants to get serious, they can do it. Elon apparently asked for a practice round in Zuckerberg's backyard.
Get a trainer.
What?
Yep, absolutely. This was also surprising because a few days ago, Elon Musk posted that the fight would be held in Rome. This is all deranged. And that he'd already coordinated with the Italian prime minister, who is that fascist girl boss, right? To make it happen at an epic location. And that all proceeds would go to veterans as well as pediatric hospitals in Italy. Anyway, what is this? I am actually genuinely wondering if the two are coordinating to get traffic to their respective social platforms by engaging in this. Because Mark's posting his shit on Threads. It's like Elon's best performing ex content. I just hate it. What are they doing? Or do you think they genuinely were ready to get in a ring and fight each other?
I think Zuckerberg was ready to get in a ring and fight.
Yes.
Yeah.
Really? Yes.
And Elon Musk is like trying to bring traffic to this and himself and make himself seem macho. But Zuckerberg, if you read their text, because like Elon Musk posted their text or something, Zuckerberg's like, like let's just do the fight already and like wrap it up. And Musk, who will fucking lose because look at Zuckerberg these days.
Zuckerberg, like actually, I mean, I don't think he's the world's greatest fighter, but he is actually training to like
he was training
Musk
before
was
this.
His ass handed to
him. Yeah. He was training before this, like for fun.
Mm-hmm. I think that what we are seeing here is that Musk and Zuck are two very different type of nerds, which is that Zuckerberg is self-serious to an enormous degree. And like kind of straightforward in a very weird way of like, yes, I will train and I will fight you. And Elon Musk is a troll who everything that he says is just, he's always quote unquote joking. None of it's ever real. He doesn't actually mean anything. He's kind of like slippery, mercurial kind of guy. Whereas Zuckerberg is a robot. Who is like, we have agreed to fight and now the fight will take place. And so that's why he seems like, I thought that we agreed to have a fight. You said it publicly that we were going to fight. And Elon Musk
ridiculous.
It's just like, we're dealing with two dudes on the opposite end of this weird polarity.
Yeah.
I'm going to be honest. I think we're also dealing with two undiagnosed individuals who are acting like this is...
Elon Musk is diagnosed.
Whatever they are diagnosed. Yeah. We're not talking about it in that context. Mm-hmm. You know, we're not talking about it as a clinical situation, which it is. Let's be clear. Like, you know, but I mean,
this segment is, are men okay? From a clinical point of view, absolutely not.
No.
Yeah. But no. I also think that with the Zuckerberg piece, yes, it's that he takes it at face value, but I also think that this speaks to like how they each are as businessmen. Like,
yeah,
they're actually, Zuck might steal things, you know, he might steal all his products or do this through acquisition, but there is a real company. There is real value. He's doing it. There's an organization, which makes it, in my opinion, ever more disappointing when you have things like what happened in Malaysia with that genocide that he could have made not happen potentially, because he does know what he's doing.
Mm-hmm.
Musk is, to your point, like he's just trolling. It's not, nothing's real. It's all irony. It's all couched in was I serious? Like, you know, and there's the mystery, the slipperiness, like you said, is what makes people drawn to him. No one's like, I idolize Zuckerberg, but I think everyone can just objectively see that that he would win and that he's real about it and that his company is also the real company. Right. It's like,
it's not the subject of clownery every single day, many days, but not every day. Whereas I mean, Twitter is every day.
It has its issues, but it is real. They pay their rent, as far as I know. They have toilet paper in the bathrooms. Actually, you know, they're not changing the name because.
Also, Elon Musk literally, like, he needs back surgery. Like, he's like, I can't fight. Like, this man, you know, this man is probably like lying immobilized, just like shit posting at Mark Zuckerberg.
I could fight just as well as Elon Musk.
Definitely.
Yeah.
I could.
He was going to get rocked. He was going to get absolutely rocked by Mark Zuckerberg.
He could have killed him, actually.
What do you think it would do to society to see Elon Musk and Mark Zuckerberg? I feel like
it was never going to happen.
Yeah, I think that's right.
No, Elon Musk was never serious.
No.
Yeah.
He was unserious the entire time.
He's going to have it at the Coliseum. Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
Italy's going to let you do this?
He tweets these things and then he probably just like watches the traffic to see if he can like get it to spike. It's just desperate.
I don't even think the Coliseum has like a cleared area, if I remember correctly. It's like all just like piles of rocks.
Mark and Elon didn't even really have like an established beef that either one needed to win until this. And now Mark Zuckerberg just comes out looking like he won a fight that Elon Musk did not even need to like instigate.
I mean, I would put him, he's a better in my mind than Elon Musk at everything. So,
yeah. I think I want to see, I'd love to see like Jeff Bezos rock Elon Musk or Rupert Murdoch.
I'd take him over both of them.
Kind of like cage match where they all, like we do a bracket and they all fight each other. And then we kind of see who is the most physically able to fight. I feel like just by virtue of the fact that Mark Zuckerberg is pursuing like UFC fighting, that he is probably, I mean, I don't know, maybe Richard Branson could come out there swinging. Ooh. but he's
a man of leisure.
I don't think that, I think he's more of a lover, not a fighter.
I think I actually think Bezos could hold his own, but Zuckerberg I think has too much legitimate training to lose, and that helps. I see Bezos as just like he's a routine gym guy, so he'll hold his own, but he's not gonna like, this isn't his area of expertise.
He would also invest in if it was coming to it, Bezos would train. He would probably hire a pretty high level person. He would go into like one of those cryogenic chamber things that zap your muscles to the same amount of like doing 100 sit-ups or whatever. He would like be using all of like the most elite technologies to like kind of Iron Man himself, I feel like.
Yeah. Elon Musk would buy all of those things, but he wouldn't use any.
No, exactly. They'd stay in the boxes.
Yeah. Like that's how, like he'd have the trainer and then he would just like not do
buy
the trainer.
Everything. Definitely.
Right. Okay, that is just who they are as people. But yeah.
I'm glad we don't live in a world where we have to watch that happen.
The Battle of the Billionaires.
We could. Yes. We should. All right. Coming up next for Women's Rights and Women's Wrongs, I had another amazing chat with Amanda Zarowski. She is the lead plaintiff, I believe, in the case in Texas where the state was suing to get some clarification around the abortion ban, which they were successful in doing. But the state immediately appealed that. They were like, oh no, doctors using their judgment to save your lives. Not that. So she came back to kind of talk about what that trial experience was like and what's next. So stick around for that. Hi, everyone. Today, I am back with Amanda Zarowski. She is one of the plaintiffs in a lawsuit against the state of Texas, alleging that its abortion ban is too restrictive when it comes to women with complicated pregnancies. Thank you for joining us, Amanda. We spoke not long ago, but there's been quite a few updates since then.
Oh, my gosh. Yes, it has been a whirlwind. Thank you for having me back. I really appreciate it. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, our audience loves to hear from you, and we're so thankful that you're so generous with your time and your experiences, and really curious to know sort of where you're at. So I'm just wondering if broadly you can kind of catch us up to the state of your lawsuit against the state of Texas, but specifically up to Judge Mangrum's ruling, and then we'll get into what happened after that. But take us through, the original outcome of that, which we talked about. We talked about the nature of your lawsuit last time, so tell us what's happened since up to that initial decision.
Sure thing. So about, it's been almost 3 weeks now since we had a two-day hearing here in Austin, and a number of the plaintiffs testified, including myself, as well as a few other patients, and then also some physicians who are listed as plaintiffs. And of course, the state brought their own quote-unquote expert witness. And so that was a pretty... I mean, that was an eye-opening couple of days. I've never been in a courtroom before. It was pretty grueling. It was extremely traumatic. It was very painful. But, you know, we got through it. We felt it was important to relive our stories for the judge to hear. And we were really glad to have our say in court and hold these people accountable and make them look us in the eye and tell us, you know, that they acknowledged that we were there. And so... after the 2 days, it was kind of a whirlwind. The judge did say that there was so much to review that it would take her a couple weeks to hand down the ruling. And she was spot on. So last Friday, about 2 weeks to the date, she released her ruling and she ruled in our favor on both the injunction and the state's filing. So it was really, really exciting.
Yeah. What did that initial victory feel like? You know, especially after, you know, I have a few questions about the hearing specifically, but after how grueling that was and just how grueling your year has been, take us back to that moment.
I think it was really validating in that it felt like, okay, we put ourselves through the ringer. We put ourselves through these horrible couple of days. And it wasn't just those 2 days, right? It was all the buildup and the prep and everything, but it felt like it was worth it. And we did this for a reason and it worked. And it was validating, I think, also to have a court rule that, yes, we have been harmed and yes, other people are being harmed and this should not be happening. It felt really validating because what the state had filed was a motion to get the entire case dismissed, saying that we didn't have any standing, which is just absurd.
For pretty gross reasons, too.
Disgusting. Right? I mean, absolutely disgusting.
Appalling. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, for example, for my own experience, they said that because I'm struggling with infertility even worse now, I'm unlikely to be pregnant again. So I can't be harmed by this.
Well, it's just
disgusting. So it was pretty validating to have a judge and a court be like, no, they do have standing. So it was a good day.
Yeah, yeah. So what happened about 12 hours later? It was pretty quick after your state was like, no, we don't like that.
Yeah. And we expected this, right? We knew. So we were very optimistic that the judge would be friendly to our cause. We didn't know exactly what that would look like. She could grant a partial injunction or, you know, they're all shades of gray in between. But we did expect that any victory that we had would be appealed by the state. And it was immediately. And, you know, again, just true to form, they're out there touting how proud of themselves they are for appealing so quickly. But I think it really speaks to their character. It's very on brand, right? Like, oh, no, we think that people should get harmed. Like a court has ruled people are being harmed. And we're saying, we being the state, that we think it should continue happening. That's essentially what their appeal means, is that they acknowledge that people are being harmed because that's how the court has ruled. but they think that it should continue. So now they've established a clear level of intent, which is just monstrous.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And then now, so next this goes to the state Supreme Court, right? And I believe the hearing for that is not until like March.
Yes. So this part is a little murky for me with my lack of legal background. but they could have appealed to the appellate court or appellate court. And the state chose to go directly to the Texas Supreme Court,
right?
Which this could be viewed positively or negatively. On one hand, you know, we were probably going to end up in front of the Supreme Court eventually anyway. So this way it just happens faster. So that could be good for us, especially as plaintiffs. So we're not dragging this out forever.
Yeah.
But my understanding is that the state Supreme Court doesn't have to agree to hear the case. Mm-hmm. So they might decide not to hear it, in which case it would go back to the appellate court and then we would start kind of over again.
Gotcha. Gotcha. And the Texas Supreme Court is 9 Republican justices, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
not quite as friendly as Austin. Travis
and
County.
I was also reading like at any point where this goes next, a judge could be like, well, they have to decide like what's the status quo. And it's just, you know, that's worth maintaining. It's just, it's pretty appalling that the status quo of women getting some of them like irreparable health outcomes is like, that's the status quo. Well, we got to keep it there. We got to keep it there for Texans' sake. Is like, they're really telling on themselves.
Exactly. And that's why, you know, win or lose, I think that this is going to bring a positive shift, right? Like even if we lose in front of the Supreme Court, like to your point, now they're outing themselves. Like, yes, we are actively saying that pregnant people in the state of Texas are being harmed and should continue to be harmed. And, you know, that's not great for the immediate future, but something major has to change to get a shift in our political landscape in this state. And if that's what it takes, I mean, that's awful. But I can see that still being a positive in the long term. Not the outcome we would want, but, you know, you got to find the silver lining in these situations. And I think, you know, we are going to see people taking similar action in other states as a result of what we're doing here. And that's huge. And that movement and that momentum is going to be crucial. And so that's really encouraging. We saw the vote in Ohio, which is near my home state of Indiana on Tuesday. And I gotta believe that, you know, some of the noise we're making is helping with some of the stuff. And so, you know, there's definitely some good no matter what happens. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, my next question was going to be, you know, the injunction is blocked and the ban is in effect for now, but just what impact do you think just the hearing had, the testimony, which was gave, you know, you and your co-plaintiffs an opportunity. And everybody that I talked to was pretty like literally sickened by it. One of the plaintiffs was literally sickened by it. What impact do you think that had just in terms of people sort of seeing how these laws are actually implemented? Like what happens when you actually implement a ban like this beyond the immediate state of the ban?
You know, it was interesting. I think when we've spoken out previously and when we've had some milestones previously, it was still a lot of education and people being like, oh my gosh, I didn't know this was happening. I didn't know this is what these bans meant.
Right.
And it didn't feel that way this time. This time it felt more like, yeah, we knew.
Yeah.
Like we've heard about this and we are outraged and now we're going to do something about it. So it feels like we've shifted into a new phase, which is really exciting and really encouraging. So, you know, like I said, no matter what happens, I think that we're just fueling the momentum. And I think every new case that comes and every new story that comes out, it's just going to keep fueling the momentum. And that's critical. I mean, we're coming up on a big election year next year, and we know that this is going to be a critical issue. So we just got to keep talking about it.
Yeah. I mean, you referenced Ohio, and I mean, the numbers there, we were talking earlier about how in that outcome, 57% of people voted no on that initiative because they knew it could result in an abortion ban in the state. That's a higher number than Democrats in the state. So it's clear that people, I think that election probably could have gone different like 2 years ago or a year ago before Roe was overturned and people started hearing what, you know, obviously, you know, around here, we believe like whatever reason you need an abortion, you should be able to have access to one. But like you said, I think people truly did not believe the extent to which like women's lives would be put at risk by this. And I feel like you are really, really seeing that impact.
Totally. And I think people who live in these kind of swing states or these purple states are seeing like, okay, this is real. And this could happen to me. This could happen in my state. Similarly, it's happening across the globe. I've done a number of international interviews where countries that are abortion friendly are bringing light to our lawsuit because they want their citizens to know, like, hey, we've got this right now, but if we make some bad decisions, here's what the outcome could look like.
And that gave me chills. Oh my God. Yeah.
Look,
but like, of course, where the warning sign across the world, like, this is what happens when you do that. And yet, like, these are the same politicians that are like American exceptionalists.
Totally. And it sucks to be the cautionary tale, but it's like people need to know that this is what can happen if we let it. And so, you know, again, that's why we'll just keep talking.
Yeah. What were some moments in the hearing where you had to kind of pick your jaw up off the floor? Because like you said, it was not just you and your co-plaintiffs sharing your stories. There were other people that unfortunately had the opportunity to talk a lot.
yeah, there were. So there were an infinite number of jaw-dropping instances. I think anytime anyone from the state's team opened their mouths, it was just like shock after shock. I mean, the callousness with which they questioned us was mind-boggling. And I was the first plaintiff to testify. And so when I was cross-examined by the state, we knew that they were not going to be friendly. We were not expecting them to be as monstrous as they were and as cruel as they were. And so that, I think, I'm very glad I went first, because I think then my fellow plaintiffs could see what to expect. And so they felt better prepared. So I was glad to do that. But yeah, just the complete lack of empathy was really surprising. I mean, just on a human level, there were multiple times when everybody in that courtroom was crying. And the judge, I mean, I don't know that she was crying, but, you know, I can't help but think she got a little emotional. Mm-hmm. The state's defense team, absolutely no emotion at all. And I'm like, how can you, especially the female, how can you, as a woman, or the male who's a father, like, how can you just not care?
Yeah. That's like, that's chilling to me.
Yeah. You know, the male, I cannot for the life of me remember his name. I Googled him like 1,000 times and now
it's not worth remembering.
Yeah, that's not information that my brain is willing to.
Well, because they don't have their original OG because he's a corrupt monster. So
That's right. He's busy elsewhere.
Yeah.
But anyway, he just kept referencing how he needed to be out of court by a certain time for childcare duty. And so I got a little bit nosy. Ooh. And I looked him up. Sure enough, he has a daughter. And so badly, I wanted to say to him, you know what? You're welcome for fighting for your daughter's rights that you're working so hard to take away from her.
Absolutely.
And just knowing that he has a daughter, I mean, it just boggles the mind.
Taking rights away from her and also openly acknowledging that there are repercussions to having kids, that not all people are like, oh, I got to leave to take care of my kids. Like, exactly, sir. Yeah.
Yep. And I'm like, what about my fellow plaintiff who has multiple children and had to drive from Houston and find childcare? But oh no, let us bow to you to get out on time so that you can go, you know,
do your
thing. Yeah. I mean, just they're above in their minds. They're just above any repercussions, any laws, any anything.
Was there just a specific part of the ban that was at issue here, like specifically physicians being able to practice their good judgment to the exceptions? Can you kind of just like clarify that?
Well, and that's actually something important to clarify that I think a lot of people don't understand, is that the hearing was just for the two motions that were filed. So on our side, the injunction, and on the state side, to dismiss the case entirely.
Okay.
The lawsuit as a whole is saying that the ban has an exception, and the exception needs to be more clear of exactly what you said. When a doctor or a physician can exercise their best judgment and what qualifies as a medical emergency. That's what we're asking, is for clarification, because right now it's not clear enough. And so we're not even asking for them to reverse it or overturn it. We're asking for the bare minimum, which on its face is letting doctors do their jobs. And it's insane that the state is saying, nope, we don't think doctors should be able to do their jobs, even when pregnant people are on death's door.
Right. You have to, it's unbelievable that you even, the concept of even like physicians having to ask permission to do their jobs, and then for that permission to be denied after everything you just spoke about, the consequence of that is as well. Thanks for clarifying that. So what's next for you, you know, personally, in terms of your advocacy around this, and what do you think is coming next for this specific case in this lawsuit?
Yeah. So for the case, we're just, you know, kind of in a holding pattern. We're just waiting to see what happens with the Supreme Court, kind of waiting to see what the next step is, what the next path is. I think there are a number of different paths that could come to fruition. I don't know which one is most likely. Some involve a full trial. Some will involve, you know, the deposition and all those things. Some will just be lawyers arguing in a courtroom and plaintiffs won't be testifying again. So there's any number of things that could happen with the case. And we're just waiting to get more information on that. As far as me personally, advocating as much as I can, you know, providing support as other people in other states might bring similar lawsuits, doing whatever I can to support those folks, doing whatever I can to support pro-abortion organizations and providers. I mean, honestly, just anything I can to help, you know, I'll do it.
Yeah. Well, you're tireless, so I'm sure we will have you back. But thank you so much for joining us again today. We really appreciate it.
Sure thing. Thanks for having me. Always a pleasure.
That is the end of our show. Until the end of democracy, I'm Amanda Duberman.
I'm Elise Morales.
I'm Sammy Sage.
And this is the Betches Up Podcast. Bye. The Betches Up Podcast is produced by Amanda Duberman, Sean Kilby, Jorge Morales Pico, and Rebecca Sasmacat. Editing by Rebecca Sasmacat. Social media by Amanda Duberman and Bridget Swartz. Be sure to follow @betches_sup on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. And send us your emails at suppod@betches.com.
Betches.